I'm sure you can see it, tears welling up my eyes remembering it.
Yeah.
It was so bad. And she, I remember she said, then stop. Stop doing it.
Welcome to Made Us. I am your host, Zach Weaver. My guest today needs little introduction from most of my listeners. But for the few listeners that don't know him, he's the host of the powerful Truth and Justice podcast, Mr. Bob Ruff. Bob's story is truly an interesting one. From a firefighter to fire chief to full-time podcaster, Bob's always had one goal, and that's to help others. And as you'll hear in this interview, that's what Truth and Justice is all about. So I have to give credit where credit is due. Without Bob in MBI Studios, I wouldn't have this podcast. This was a crazy idea I had one night, sitting on a back deck, drinking a beer. I told Bob the concept I had for this show. He thought it was a pretty neat idea, so I asked him what I should purchase to start a podcast. He looked me square in the eye and said, "Why the hell would you buy anything when there's a studio right here?" And when you get to know Bob, that's truly him. Bob just really wants to make a difference and wants to help. If you like what you've been hearing on Made Us, take a moment to subscribe to the show, rate and review the show, and share the show with a friend. By leaving a review in iTunes, it helps put the show in front of new listeners, and it also helps a bunch if you share the show. Sharing the show with a friend really helps the show grow, and I can't thank you enough for doing it. And if you'd like to keep up with us on social media, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/madeuspodcast, and on Instagram and Twitter at madeuspodcast. And if you have a guest suggestion, drop us a line at madeuspodcast@hotmail.com. So I'm sure all of you are tired of hearing me talk and are ready to hear Mr. Truth and Justice himself. So without further ado, please help me welcome Bob Ruff. So in studio today, in my studio today, I've got Bob Ruff. Bob, welcome.
Thanks for having me in your studio today.
Yeah, that's right, in my studio today. And as we joke about that, obviously, this is your studio. This is the MBI Studios, which I'm proud to be part of.
Yeah, so it's our studio.
It's our studio.
But this is for sure my fucking seat.
I am in a different seat today, which is weird. I get to see a whole different wall of the studio, so that's fun.
Pictures of me.
I'm looking at pictures of you, which normally I don't have to face, so right. It's okay, but I'll give it to you this time.
You'll get through.
Maybe. So, Bob, I really appreciate you joining me today. Most of the listeners are going to know who you are and what you do. But for the few listeners that don't know, let's fill in the gaps for them.
So I'm Bob Ruff, and I'm an architect. I've wanted to be an architect my whole life. I shouldn't have done that while you were drinking the beer.
It's all good.
I needed you to laugh there. No, I've always wanted to pretend to be an architect. It's a throwback to all you Seinfeld fans. I'm a podcaster. I host the Truth and Justice podcast and the Off Duty podcast. And prior to that, I was a fireman. And prior to that, I was a construction worker. And prior to that, I was an Air Force ROTC cadet in college.
So you're just a grab bag of everything.
Yeah, I've hit restart a few times in my life for sure.
The restart button. Yeah, it happens. A little bit of refresh, restart.
Mm-hmm.
So for the people that don't know what Truth and Justice is, give us a quick overview of Truth and Justice.
Truth and Justice is, I think it's pretty cool. It's a crowdsourcing investigation of wrongful convictions. So it's a serialized podcast. We produce, well, actually two, because we have a main episode and a follow-up episode every week. And we take on a case per season. Sometimes they go for a whole year. Sometimes it just depends on how long it takes. Sometimes half a year. But we do a very, very detailed deep dive into cases that we think are potentially wrongful conviction cases. And, you know, we investigate the investigation, the trial transcripts, and then we shift into, if we believe that they are wrongfully convicted, we shift into a new investigation into new suspects and try to solve the case. And we work with attorneys from the Innocence Project of Texas and several other attorneys.
Yeah, it seems like you get stuck in Texas a whole lot.
There's some corrupt people in Texas.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
So, yeah, it started, one of our first cases was in Texas, which led to another case that was in Texas, which led to another one that was all happened in season two, all in the same county. And we were able to, ultimately became Ed Eight's case, who was just released from prison just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome. But that case, I pitched that case to the Innocence Project of Texas. and convinced them to take it and represent it. So I started working with their attorneys, which at first was super weird because attorneys don't like working with the media.
Yeah, and you're just Joe Schmo too.
Right. I'm nobody. Like I'm still nobody, but super nobody then because the podcast was new. I was literally introduced as there's this fireman guy who has a podcast from Michigan that's working on this case. He brought it to us and we're going to take it. And he hands it to Allison Clayton, who became Ed's attorney. But then through that, when we finished up that case, that relationship got much better. And we realized how much we can accomplish because we've got a large audience.
Yeah.
And the way it works is every week, you know, I break down a small section of the case in detail, like in more detail than it's ever been talked about before. And then I talk about it on the podcast, and then the listeners engage. I post the documents, crime scene photos, all that stuff each week, and then they engage and they expand upon that, offer resources in any way they can help. And it just it's a really, really powerful tool. I mean, it's kind of shaping a lot of things in the criminal justice system, especially when it comes to post-conviction work.
Yeah, and the whole concept of the podcast, of being a crowdsourced podcast, is really interesting. It's the first time I've ever seen anything like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was an accident, really.
Yeah.
You know, when I started doing this, it was just a hobby. I was a fireman, like I said, and I was obsessed with the serial case, like millions of other people. And the show was originally called The Serial Dynasty.
Okay.
Because when the podcast Serial came out, there were, you know, I was like so many other people. I was obsessed, and I wanted more, more, more. And if you put in Serial into the podcast directories, there was a million podcasts about Serial.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was podcasts talking. That's where that name came from.
Okay.
And I was like, there's like a dynasty of these podcasts. and I think I landed on Serial Dynasty because I was like searching GoDaddy for available domains.
And it just happened to be available.
Yeah, and I was like, I tried a few others. Then I tried, well, what about Dynasty? Serial Dynasty. And oh, that one's available. Of course it is because it's a stupid fucking name. But so I became Serial. But it was more of just like a fan show. At that point, like I was talking about what they were doing on Undisclosed, talking about kind of my theories on the case, and then listeners would email in their theories and we talking about those.
And just kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah, kind of we kind of ran out of stuff to talk about, but we still had questions, you know, and it was like, somebody needs to talk to Neighbor Boy. Somebody needs to ask Neighbor Boy this. It was a character from a serial character, a real life person, but in the story, a character. And I was like, well, fuck it. I'll do it.
You know, you say that, and I'll stop you for a second. It does feel like some of those times you forget. You know, I listen to your podcast. I've been a fan of your podcast now. And you do forget that they're real people.
Yeah.
You know, it does become like that character. You do forget they're real people.
It's really interesting for me because, so I have to write these episodes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'll spend, you can see I was working on earlier today. I'm going through a trial transcript, the testimony of a medical examiner.
Okay.
So first, it's like a very detailed, factual, you know, look at this. And I've got, you know, how many yellow legal pads laying all over the place here, like an investigator would do. And then I have to write a story, in air quotes, because I have to make something that is interesting and listenable but from the listeners. And so I've got to, so I almost have to warp these real people into characters for a story to be able to write the podcast every week. So it's tricky.
It's a process and it's neat and you do a really good job at it. I mean, I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass, but you do a pretty decent job at it, I guess.
Blow away. Any smoke you want to blow this way is fine. No, but I appreciate it. And I think, you know, I'm getting more comfortable in my skin doing that. I've got a long ways to go, but we learn stuff every day. You know, we added a couple people to our team over the last couple of years. We hired Mike Bussing, who's our executive producer. You know, who was a friend who just kind of helped out. And
yeah.
He was one of my firemen at the fire department. And he's just come a long way as a producer and an editor. And then we brought on Shane Yoder. He's from Nashville. And his company's PutThemInASong.com. And they do, it went from, hey, I need a couple tracks of music for an intro, to now he scores our episodes and sound engineers them. So,
and if you've heard our intro and outro, Shane also did our intro and outro for us, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's funny because it's kind of changed his... You know, he'd be another interesting one you may want to talk to sometime, because he's another one that all of us kind of had our lives restart. So I was a fire chief. Mike was working on the fire brigade at a nuclear plant and was a volunteer fireman. You know, and Shane used to work at a guitar factory. And then, you know, now here we are a couple of years later and, you know, Mike and I work full time doing podcasting, and Shane, you know, a good portion of his time. Shane's got a lot of other projects too. Another NBI show, The Root Note podcast, and his business, PutThemInASong.com, where he writes stuff. But it's just, you know, he went from just doing a little bit of work on my podcast to doing podcast scoring to now he writes intros and music for lots and lots of podcasts.
Yeah, and it's awesome. He does a really good job with that stuff, for sure.
Yeah, Shane's awesome.
So the reason I brought you all the way down here to the studio was to kind of talk about your journey from a firefighter to a podcaster. So let's jump on that.
It's interesting. It's kind of a broken, my whole life's kind of a broken road story. I freaking love my life right now. You know, I've got, you know, I'm married to one of the most amazing women in the world. I have my two boys, and then Becky, my wife, has her two kids, Jackson and Bella, my stepkids. And we're all just an awesome family. I love what I do. I work from home. But man, it was a long messed up road to get here. And part of it, I was just very lucky or blessed, however you want to look at it. So I guess, I don't know where you want me to start. I started as a fireman in 2000.
Okay.
And
just a grunt fireman.
Yeah. Yeah. A volunteer fireman. I started as, you know,
how'd you get into that? I mean, just a quick.
So, you know, I always kind of wanted to do something that I felt was meaningful with my life. And when I went to college, I went to University of Colorado on an Air Force ROTC scholarship. And my plan was to be a career military guy, Air Force guy. That's what I planned to do. And there was some issues in my second year of college to where it was literally a clerical error on their part.
Oh, geez.
That caused me to not be able to continue that program. I could have continued it, but I had to pay for my own school for a couple of years, which I couldn't afford to do.
Yeah, that's hard to do.
Yeah. And I'd always done construction my whole life. As you know, from the time I was 13, I was helping out on construction crews. And so when I dropped out of college at that point, I started swinging a hammer, doing what I love, or doing what I know anyway.
Yeah. And was that still in Colorado or was that back here?
Started in Colorado and then I came back here. I actually got hired with the company I worked for when I was in high school as kind of their operations manager.
Oh, nice.
Doing drywall and stuff like that and painting. And then I eventually left there and started my own business. And so at 21 years old, I was thriving. You know, I was, as far as you can be thriving at that age, having a little business. I had a couple guys that worked for me and, you know, it was a good little business. Something hit me one day. I just finished a big job in the summertime because I used to build decks too as part of my work. And I just finished a big job and got a big paycheck. And I went to Martin's in Niles to go on a Friday to go. I remember I was going to go get myself a six pack and a T-bone.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And, treating yourself.
Yeah. And I was going to go home and grill up that T-bone, drink some beer. Good week. And when I was leaving Martin's, right across the street, there was a huge fire. Big in Superior Metals was the place.
Oh, geez.
Big industrial fire. And I remember driving by, and I hadn't even thought about it. My family were firefighters, my dad, my uncle. And I remember seeing all the guys out there, and they were just, it was a hot, sweltery summer day. And they were about like that picture. They looked about like that picture that's up there on the wall you were looking at earlier. Yeah. Where they were just, the guys were just dying and they were hot and they were changing their air packs and trying to drink water bottle. And I just thought, you're a piece of shit, you know, at the time. So I'm like 21 or 22.
Yeah.
And I was in great shape back then. And it was like, I'm young, healthy, strong guy.
And to clarify, when you said that, you're talking about yourself.
Right. Yeah. But you know, I'm just this young, healthy, strong guy. And I always intended to do something meaningful. And now I'm just, you know, I'm doing construction just because it pays well. You know, which there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, it was like, I should be there helping those guys.
Yeah.
Next day, I went down to the fire department and asked them if they took volunteers. I said they did, fill out the application. And I'm kind of an all-in guy. So I went straight from the fire department with the application down to the local community college and enrolled in an EMT course in their fire science program.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because I also never finished school, and that always bugged me too.
Yeah.
So I was a math major in college, of all things.
A math major.
Right, mathematics.
Okay.
Turns out was supposed to be applied mathematics, hence the not in the ROTC program anymore. So I volunteered to be a fireman. I went to college for it. And then I just got bit, man. The first couple times after my academy, my training, first couple times I went into a fire and was just like, this is what I want to do. This is back to where my roots were. You know, I wanted to do something that was meaningful, that helped people.
And I feel like it takes a special person to do that too.
Some kind of special.
Something kind of special. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's an amazing job. And I saw, you know, tons of friends that do it, and it's a rewarding job. And it always was for me for a long time.
Okay.
And after a couple of years, I decided, like, man, even though by then my business was really taking off, I was like, man, I want to be able to do more. I think I want to be a full-time firefighter, which is a fucked up schedule. They work 24-hour shifts.
Yeah.
You know, and you're gone a lot, but you also only work 9 days a month. So that's kind of cool. But I just wanted to live it. I loved it.
Yeah. And it's hard to give up something that you've already been doing too. Like you said, you had an established career,
right?
And you're kind of ready to go.
Yeah. And in that business and construction, if you're doing good work, usually it's going to snowball. You just get busier and busier as the time goes, and you make, you know, better and better money as you go. But but also becoming a full-time fireman is extremely competitive.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, there's hundreds for every one job that's available that apply to them. But I said, hell with it. So I went and I applied at South Bend, Elkhart, and Niles Township.
Okay.
And then I was lucky enough to get a job offer from Niles Township. And
that's convenient, too.
Yeah, and it was right there. I lived in Niles Township. Actually, I lived in the city then. But
nice.
I was like, this is great. So I took the job. I still, you know, and it was my, I could still do little side jobs and stuff, but I became a full-time firefighter. And man, for years, I mean, I was a backstep fireman. And for those who don't know, that means my job was to fight fire, kick down doors, drag hoses.
Oh, nice.
You know, rescue kittens and stuff like that. You know, that was my job. And then, you know, I kind of quickly moved up through the ranks, small department, didn't take long before I moved up a little bit to an officer role, and then got to be where I was, you know, eventually the last few years I was on one of the busier engines in the county, and I was the officer in charge of that engine, and it was awesome.
Okay, what's an officer, just to fill me in, because I'm an idiot?
So Niles Towns is very small. There's like one person on duty, sometimes two, and we were supplemented by volunteers.
Okay.
But every truck in every station has a crew. Okay. Every crew has an officer. So that's how the crews are divided up by vehicles. So like an engine company is going to consist of a driver, an officer that's either lieutenant or captain that's in charge of that rig and that crew, and then a couple of firefighters in the back.
Okay.
And so it's the leader of that truck.
Okay.
And then at a bigger station where you got two or three, you know, maybe you got an engine and a truck and whatever, different vehicles with a couple different crews, then they'll usually be like a captain in charge of the station.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah. And then there'll be a battalion chief that's in charge of multiple stations. So it's just a big, depending on how big the department is. So basically I was in charge of my guys. I was in that department as high as you can go, where you're still fighting fire.
Nice.
Loved it. By then, I had a couple of kids and through a couple of divorces. You know, there was, you know, so my time was limited with my kids.
Yeah.
And then I met Becky, and I was just, you know, head over heels in love with her. And I just wanted to spend time with her. And I was just missing time with, you know, when you're divorced, your time with your kids is split anyway.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like having a job where you're working 24-hour shifts and you're either... So then that becomes, you're either at work or you're running kids around, but you're not getting to spend much quality time with them because you're so busy. And it was too much. And so I did what I said I would never do. And I applied for a fire chief job.
Okay.
Because the chiefs don't work 24-hour shifts. The chiefs work, you know, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 hours, banker's hours.
Yeah.
And
more of a desk job.
Yeah, it is a desk job.
Okay.
Complete. I mean, for me, I was still at a smaller department, so, you know, I still got to do a little bit, but not like I wanted to.
Yeah.
Got the job. Not at that department, at another department. So I moved to the other end of the county, and I was the fire chief. And so now I'm wearing white polyester uniform shirts and ties and arguing with politicians and stuff. But
you're good at that, though.
Yeah, especially the white polyester. I got a whole wardrobe full of. I probably still have a lot. I probably have a closet full of white polyester dress shirts.
Oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, so I took the job and I got up there, and at first I really liked it. You know, I had most fire departments like that are managed by some sort of board. You know, it's not like there's like the township board and then there's like a fire board or a safety council or whatever. So I had this fire board. That's who hired me. They were awesome. They were super supportive. And we were, you know, I went in there and said, if I'm going to be the boss, I'm going to be the boss. And we're making changes and I'm adding manpower and equipment and trying to get balancing that with the budget. I have a business background. So I'm, you know, because over the years I got my degree in fire science and then in business, and things were going great. You know, I was really enjoying managing the guys. I love the personnel side of it. I love my job. And then shit started to break bad.
And that was that with the political side or just kind of everything?
It's kind of everything all at once. And it doesn't take much. So that a lot of people don't know, the fire service is full of fucking drama.
I can imagine.
Like more than you'd ever think. Part of it is because in the full-time side where I was working 24-hour shift, you live with these people.
Yeah.
You literally spend a third of your lives. And that's eating meals, bedtime, arguing over the TV, you know, and it's a bunch of, you know, in my case, it was a bunch of grown men. You know, it could be men and women, whatever it is. But whatever family drama is, except you can't fucking leave.
Yeah, no, I get it for sure, because we talk about that a lot. My coworker, TJ Lucas, who was on episode 6 of this show,
mm-hmm.
we've joked about it a lot, that we see each other more than we see our spouses.
Right.
Because you're just together all day, every day,
mm-hmm.
10 plus hours a day. You know, we weren't working 24 hours, but we're working 10 hours a day.
Right.
Every day. So, you know, like you said,
it equals even more hours.
Yeah. You don't realize that you're stuck with that person.
Yeah. And I'm sure much the same. You can't really get away. Like for us, we literally couldn't. Like we would be prosecuted for abandoning our post.
Yeah.
But for you guys, I mean, you're going to walk out in the middle of somebody's tattoo.
No, absolutely. Yeah. You're just stuck next to each other.
Yeah. But I've been stuck right between you guys many times for hours.
Yeah. A few times.
While you were hurting me. DJ was laughing.
It happens though.
But so there's always a lot of drama, and it always seemed like in the fire service, there's always just like, you're always just like right on this pendulum. Like any little thing one way or the other is just going to just completely tumble the house cards.
Yeah.
It's going to come down. And so that's kind of what happened. So things were going pretty well. There's always drama. This guy's bitching about this guy. You wouldn't believe the shit. Like guys come, like we have a structure fire, a big house fire, and go out there and kick its ass. And it's like, that's what you're, as a fireman, that's what you're living for. Yeah, right?
Get that adrenaline going and just going for it.
Yeah, because 99% of the job isn't that.
Yeah.
You know, you're either at the station doing work, cleaning trucks, doing inspections, running burning complaints, and where people are bitching about their neighbors burning leaves, you know, a lot of car accidents, small fires, you know, lots of stuff like that. And so it's when the tone drops and it's a fire. There is a house on fire. Like, that's what gets your blood rushing. That's what you got into this job for. You're going to go, you know, try to save the day, do whatever you're going to do. But for me, like, that's when I can go really affect somebody's life.
Yeah.
Affect some change in somebody's life, whether it's saving their property or pulling them out of a house or whatever it's going to be. You know, so we'd be at a structure fire. And, like, that's, like, the best part. That's when all the drama should stop.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and it does for that moment. So we go and we put the fire out and everything. And then we, you know, before I get back into my truck to go home, you know, somebody's coming at me. Well, I didn't like the way the lieutenant was talking to me. He's rude and I'm sick of the shit and something needs to be done.
Oh, geez.
Like, well, he yelled at me. I'm like, well, the house was on fire. So he was stressed out.
Yeah, it's an intense moment. It's going to happen.
Yeah. Or, you know, this guy didn't know how to do this, or he pulled the wrong line. And then like backstabbing stuff. There's always that shit going on.
Oh, geez.
On the fire service. But, you know, as the chief, it's kind of my job to manage all that. And it's stressful, but I didn't mind doing it too much. It was definitely not my favorite part of the job. But point being, kind of like, that balance was there. Things were good. Loved my job. A couple of board members got flipped on my board. So we had one got arrested for embezzlement.
Oh, geez.
Mm-hmm. And he went to prison. And so then somebody else got his spot. Somebody got elected to another position, so they had to replace him. And I don't know. Somebody moved. Whatever it was, out of the six members, like four of them changed. So fire chief, just like firefighter, very competitive job.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was 40 some people that applied for this job. They whittled it down to three of us that did the interview. And from the whole time I was in there, most small towns also have what's called a coffee clutch, which is a bunch of old men that sit down at a coffee shop somewhere in your town tomorrow.
Yeah.
Go to the coffee shop in your town. And I guarantee you there's a table with six old men bitching about everything in town. One of the things, the topics of conversation will be the fire department. You'd never think anybody would, you wouldn't ever think twice about what's going on with the fire department.
Yeah.
But these guys would do it. And part of that coffee clutch were, so I got the job, but number two and number three are part of this coffee clutch.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. And so it's like literally like attempts to sabotage. I had a guy threaten me in my office. It was part of that group, like a veiled threat. Shortly after I started, he was, I don't remember what he was bitching about.
Trying to provoke you? Is that what they were trying to do?
No, because they were all old men. I was still, it's hard to believe the lump of shit you see in front of you now was a very muscular, fit guy back then. But I was. And this guy wasn't, he's not trying to fight me, but he said something to me along the lines of, you know, I'm from Chicago. We do Chicago politics. So just keep that in mind. And he wanted something, and I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
And it had to do with like, he didn't like some guy in my department and wanted me to like get rid of him or promote him or whatever, but was literally like some shit like, who do you think you're talking to? We're in a tiny little town in this little fire department. Yeah. You know, Chicago politic me into promoting your buddy, the volunteer fireman.
Yeah, like this isn't the mafia, buddy.
Right. But that's the kind of shit that was going down. Well, so when these board members flipped all through this politics, all of a sudden the number two guy on the list for my job, so wanted my job, still wants my job, is now on the fire board. Then the best friend of guy number three, part of the coffee glitch, is on the fire board.
Oh, geez.
Things just started breaking bad, and I was just miserable. Now, back up about 8 months before that,
okay,
I had started the Serial Dynasty as a hobby. And that's about when things were breaking bad. But it was, you know, it was kind of an outlet for me. So on the weekends and evenings, I started the podcast.
Okay. And that was your first, not your first attempt into podcasting? Is that kind of how that started? Or
it was actually my second. This all happened because my mother-in-law for Christmas that year, the year before. So this would have been, that was 2015. So it was the Christmas of 2014. My mother-in-law is still really big into Christmas. Like grown-ass adults spend like $200 a person on.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And like literally like there's a formula. So yeah. She couldn't figure out what to get me for Christmas. So she gave me $200.
All right.
I'm a grown ass man. My mommy-in-law gave me $200. So she gives me $200 and I'm like, what am I do with this? And we'd been talking. So sitting around like what we're doing right now, every morning at every fire station across America, there's a group of guys and gals sitting around drinking coffee, talking shit. And there's a certain, like you said earlier, there's a certain kind of person that's drawn into the fight that, you know, that can do that kind of work. Well, there is that type of person typically is a very type A smart ass personality. So you
could see that.
Yeah. You put six of those guys in a room every day and the conversations are hilarious. So for years, we always used to say, we should record this. We should. I remember my buddy, his name's Mike. We used to call him Zabo. But Zob always said, we should make a podcast. And then I would say, what's a podcast? And he said, I don't know, but we need to make one. None of us knew what a podcast was.
I don't know what it is, but let's do it.
Right. We need a podcast. And he said, we need an app. He says, he used to always say we need an app.
Too. An app.
I'm like, what does that mean? I don't know. We need an app, though. Everybody has an app nowadays. But so anyway, so I had this $200 and I was like, what am I going to spend $200 on? And I was like cruising around Amazon and there was like this podcaster's kit. I just like came up in my feed and I was like, a podcaster kit. And it was like a mixer, like one, just like one of these.
Yeah.
Mixer and a microphone. And it was like $100. I'm like, sweet. I'm going to buy a podcasting kit.
Okay.
So I bought a podcasting kit and we had this idea for the Off Duty podcast, which was, you know, just basically it was coffee table conversations with firemen, but when they're off duty. And it's not up anymore. We're getting ready to reboot it actually. But so that was the first one I did. I made Off Duty with Mike.
Okay.
And our friend Ryan, and then we would have a guest. You've been a guest on that show.
Yeah, several times. I've been on twice, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So Mike was part of that, and also you had researched Ryan from Off Duty.
Right.
And he was part of the fire station as well?
Yep. He was also one of our firefighters. Nice. And it was literally like around the table, me saying, okay, I want to do this podcast. We need like at least two more guys who wants to do it. Mike's like, I'll do it. And Ryan said, I'll do it. So we're like, cool. Meet me at my house on Saturday morning at 9.
Oh, that's awesome.
And we'll make a podcast.
You just do it like around the living room or the dining room table?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, and we put up a little table in the basement and when the kids weren't home and we made a fucking podcast. and like figured out how to like, and literally I learned how to make a podcast from YouTube.
A lot of people do that.
Yeah.
You know, I've told you that before, but my dad has always told me that. He said, there's nothing you can't do that you can't figure out how to do by watching YouTube.
Right.
I re-roofed my house.
Right.
2 years ago, I watched YouTube. I found a whole series on YouTube of how to re-roof a house.
I did the same thing with a septic system at my cabin.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I was like, how do I make a septic system?
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, it's going to cost me $5,000 or I can buy the parts for it for $1,000.
Yeah. It's crazy that you can just find all that on YouTube.
Yeah. And that's all it was. I went on YouTube and I was looking at it. So it told me like Audacity, which is the software we use. It's what software to use. The hosting site, which at the time we were using Podomatic because that's what the YouTube video said. And we made a fucking podcast.
That's awesome.
And it was just us talking and we were having fun. I mean, there were people listening, like maybe 100 people listening.
Okay.
You know, not a whole lot, but it was growing a little bit. We were just having fun though. We just loved doing it. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
Just sitting around shooting the shit and, you know, and having our guests out and talking about, we actually moved it out to my storage shed out there. Because it was hard to find time when there was no kids around.
I can't imagine you guys sitting around in the storage shed.
Like oh.
3 to 5 guys out there sitting out there just.
Dude, it was straight pimping. We had, I bought on Amazon black movers blankets.
Yeah.
And I had them lining the walls and the ceiling. And then I had one that was, so I have like lofts on each end.
Okay.
And I had them where I could roll them down and drape them. So when you were in the table like this recording, you were completely surrounded by these black, you felt like you were in a studio. We were out, but we were in the shed. And it was great until summertime. And this sucked. It was like 1,000 degrees in there. Yeah,
I can imagine.
Mm-hmm. I used to record Zero Dynasty in there too.
Oh, Jesus.
Before we built the studio. But no, so I had made Off Duty. And it was one day Parker was sick, my youngest. He's 7 now. He was, I guess, 4 at the time. And I had to stay home from work with him. And I was listening to Serial for the umpteenth time. And I'm like, I got this idea. I'm going to make a quick website and I'm going to make a podcast where I say, hey, I like cereal. You like cereal. Send me emails about what you think and I'll talk about them. Had no intention of making any money, or I was like, everybody else is doing it. I want to make a podcast. I've got the stuff right here. It's no big deal.
That's crazy that came from that simple idea.
That's all it was. That's all it was. They email me at theories@serialdynasty.com and tell me your theories and I'll talk about them.
Oh, wow.
That's all it was. And it was fun.
Did you have a pretty good response right away, or did it take some time?
I did have a pretty good response right away, but it was so Serial was still really hot right then.
Yeah.
And I got a couple of powerful retweets. So Robbie Ashoudry, who is the one that introduced the Serial story to Sarah Koenig.
Okay.
And then also created the Undisclosed podcast, which was going at the same time, which was huge.
Yeah.
I put it out. She stumbled across it. You know, she probably had Google alerts on or something and tweeted out, hey, check out this podcast. This guy seems to be doing a good job. And it was like the first episode I go in and I look and I'm like, holy shit. 7,000 downloads.
Holy cow, that's awesome.
And it was something, I wrote a little script, went down the basement and recorded a 15-minute, it wasn't even 15 minutes. Like, it's cringeworthy. Go listen to episode, season one, episode one of Truth and Justice, near me saying, and I was being all dramatic, right? And like on a shitty microphone, it sounds like shit. It's like, but what you're asking yourself is, why are you listening to this podcast? Well, you're listening to this podcast for the same reason that I'm making this podcast, because we're obsessed with cereal. Like, was like my script.
That's great.
Yeah. And so all I had done was introduce, this is my idea. Shoot me an email. We'll talk about it and see what happens. And I said I was going to do them every 2 weeks. And by the time that second week rolled around, like my inbox was flooded. And it was, like I said, there were thousands of people listening. And then it just snowballed. It was a crazy thing to happen, and it really had much more to do with luck than skill by any means. It was just the timing. Serial was hot. Robbie liked it, and Robbie had tons of followers, and it took off. But that was why I was still at the fire department.
Those chances are awesome, though, when they happen.
Yeah, it's incredible. Changed my life.
Yeah.
It absolutely changed my life, and that's why we're here right now. And because over time, that was getting more and more popular. The audience was growing. And that was in May. By the end of summer, we were in 60, 70, 80,000 downloads an episode.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And it was like, holy shit. Like, this is getting to be a big deal. Like, then it was like, I was doing it weekly, and then it was like stress. I'm like, I got it. Now I'm trying to balance this with work, family, and get the podcast done every week. I was editing till 1 a.m, in my bed on a laptop, just trying to get this thing done. So then during this time is when this shift happens in my board. And it just turned into a daily battle. Like, for example, that summer, there were some budget issues after the treasurer went to prison. He didn't really embezzle any money from us. It was from another organization he worked for. But there were some shady doings still going on.
Yeah.
And the new treasurer was like, whatever. It was something like she wanted to keep so much money in savings.
Okay.
Just in case of something, it was going, and there was maybe a legitimate reason for it. I don't remember honestly off the top of my head. I remember it was like, you don't put money in savings when we have bills due right now.
Yeah,
and one of the bills was to pay our manpower to train. Their national safety requirements for how much training firefighters have to do every month. We couldn't even meet that, but we were giving it hell, doing as much as we can do. And we had a meeting, and she says they wanted to buy a new board table. The fire board met once a month at the fire station.
Okay.
And there's a table at the fire station, a big table where we all sit around and eat. Well, at that particular station, it was just four plastic tables. Worked fine for us. Once a month, the board met there and three people would be in the audience. That was it.
Yeah.
We need a new table, a nicer table. We need a nice board table. And at the time, it was like, fine, we've got money in the budget. But then she decides we can't spend the money that's in the budget. And wants to order this new table. In the same meeting, they put an order in for this $2,000 table. They told me that I couldn't pay for training for my guys for the whole summer.
Oh, geez.
And which I said, no, no. Like, that's not happening. They have to train, first of all, because it's unsafe.
Yeah.
These guys are making next to nothing as paid on call firefighters, risking their lives. I'm not going to not give them the training they need. Plus, it's illegal. There's safety requirements we have. We have to train them. Well, just tell them they need to train, but they need to put something back into this department. They need to volunteer their time to train. So imagine, you know me well enough. Can you imagine how I would react to them buying a $2,000 table? And by the way, the monthly training budget was about $1,500.
Oh, man.
And so for a month, no training.
Yeah, you're like, we don't need this fucking table.
Right. Take the fucking table. It wasn't even, we didn't have it yet. They just ordered. I'm like, we already ordered it. Good. Cancel it. We don't need it. We need a pair of guys.
Yeah.
And then they told me again to tell my guys to. And the problem with small town boards and things like that are these aren't career politicians. These aren't, you know, people that have a background necessarily in what they're doing. They're just like Joe Schmo, whoever.
Yeah.
Anybody. So none of them had any background. Our treasurer had a high school education. Nothing wrong with that, but she's doing the accounting for a $1.2 million a year business with no accounting education whatsoever.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
Mm-hmm. And it happens all the time. And so they're telling me to tell my guys to be firefighters or to go to training, but they're not going to get paid for it. And then I had to share with them how illegal that is.
Yeah.
It's illegal to make your employees work for free.
Yeah.
It's also illegal, so that doesn't go the other way. It's, I mean, many people don't know this. It's actually illegal to volunteer for your employer.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it's because of things like that where they'd say, well, maybe you just want to volunteer to do this if you want to keep your job. And, oh, I volunteer to do it. So it's the law's in place to not, so that kind of shit doesn't happen.
Makes sense. Yeah. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And so then they were like, well, no, it's not. I'm like, yeah, it is. Like, read a book.
Yeah.
like you're managing a massive organization, not massive in size, but in money. I mean, that's a lot of money to me.
That is a lot of money.
Yeah. And you don't have a clue what's going on. So it was fights like that over and over and over and over again. And they wanted to, there was a group of them that wanted me out of there because they wanted their friend or this guy wanted the job, whatever it was. There was people that just didn't like me that wanted me out of there. And then there was all that arguing. I got to the point where I was having like panic attacks, which I'm a pretty easygoing guy. I'm a solutions type of guy.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, when something happens, I'm almost never the guy that's like, oh fuck, I can't believe this is happening. I'm just, that's just not me. Like, my immediate reaction is, okay, what's plan A, B, and C to fix this? Had to be that way because of my job.
Yeah.
You can sit around and just dwell on things. You gotta make a decision.
Yep, let's figure this out now.
Mm-hmm. So it was super out of character for me to, like, when I had to go to these board meetings, because they also, the board meetings were shit shows, because the whole coffee clutch and their friends would come to the meetings.
Yeah.
And then they would attack me the meetings. And it would turn into this bag of they would ask questions and I'd give them the answers and they didn't like the answers and they'd get pissed off about it. And it was just turning into a shit show. So then the way they fixed it was to tell me, you have to be here at every one of these meetings and you have to take questions from the audience. You are not allowed to respond to them.
So they would just fire off questions at you and you had to sit there.
Mm-hmm. And then yell at me to my face for not answering them. Like calling me like literally like a piece of shit. I can't believe this piece of shit. You can't even answer a question.
Holy cow.
They would not tell them that they told me I wasn't allowed to answer them. Like shit like that. So
that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. And so this is building and building and building. So meanwhile, that's how I met Sean T, fitness guy.
Okay.
Right. So Sean T, it was a listener. He used to tweet at me all the time.
Really?
Yeah. And I didn't know I guess I knew he was. I didn't give a shit who he was.
Yeah.
Becky did though. Yeah. And so that was like my shit because Becky and I, you've been spending enough time around with us. Like we're always joking around with each other constantly. Yeah. And she'd be talking to me. I'd be at the dinner table and she'd be saying something to me. I'm like, hang on. Wait. Sorry. Sean T's tweeting me. Hang on. Give me a second. I gotta write Sean back. And she'd be getting all pissed because she knew I didn't give two shits about.
Yeah.
I do now. He's one of my good friends and he's one of the most amazing human beings on the planet. It was one of the most amazing things ever that I got to meet him.
That's awesome.
So he had a new exercise program coming out. And a new website coming out. And
was that before or after the insanity stuff?
After insanity.
Okay.
It was after Max 30. It was when he did Size, which is the dancing one.
Okay.
That's what was coming out. And so we were talking and I was like, hey, you know, I'm looking at maybe getting some sponsorships for the podcast because I'm listening to other podcasts and they're fucking reading ads for Casper mattresses and stamps.com. And I'm like, why aren't I reading ads for, I feel like they're getting money. Someone's paying them to do that.
There's a reason this is happening. How does this work?
Yeah. And I started doing some research on it about what the rates were and stuff. And I'm like, man, I don't know how to. So I'm like, well, I know Sean's got money, right?
Yeah.
I'll ask Sean if he wants to give me some money. You know, so yeah. I was like, do you want to sponsor the show? And he did. He's like, yeah, I got this new program coming out.
$12.
Yeah. and he gave me, so we negotiated by fair market price what it would cost. And he bought 3 months worth of ads.
An exclusive
sponsorship, and it wasn't a lot of money, but it was enough that made it. For me, it was a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't, I'm sure, for him, but for me, it was a good chunk of money. It was a couple $1,000s.
Nice. If it was $20 an episode, that's fine.
Right. Yeah.
That's
a dollar.
That's better than you were making.
Yeah. I was paying for bandwidth. It was right at that point where the show was costing me money, but I wasn't making any money.
Oh, yeah.
And so he bought some sponsorship. I'm like, oh, maybe there's some potential to make some money here. And never in 15 years did I ever think I would ever leave the fire department.
Yeah.
Loved my job. Loved what I did. It's what I always wanted to do. You know, well, in my second life, it's what I always wanted to do. And there's just nothing could have ever pulled me away from that. And then all this shit's going on. And I'm like, God, I might have to get out of here. And it was souring me so much. I didn't even want to be a fireman anymore. It wasn't really? Like I need to go to another department. I'm like, I need to go. I have the skill set to go, you know, manage some business somewhere as a personnel manager or a CFO or something like that of a small business.
Is that kind of what you were thinking? I mean, were you thinking? Yeah.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Coloma Frozen Foods, their CFO left, and I knew him from the owner because I was doing inspection stuff out there. And I remember thinking, it's like, maybe I'll go, you know, apply for that job. But the problem is, here's the thing. If you do a job like you're a cop or a fireman or you're in the military, when you get out, your skill set, unless somebody's really thinking outside the box, your skill set doesn't mean shit.
Yeah.
On paper, I'm a guy with an associate's degree in fire science and half a college, a bachelor's degree in business administration.
Yeah.
You know,
so how are you going to run this big company?
Right. In reality, I was running a company with a 30 some employees and a $1.2 million a year budget and $4 million worth of assets and on a day-to-day basis, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, on the outside, it doesn't look like that at all.
Mm-mm. So, yeah, you're a fireman. You squirt water at fire, and you want to come run my business.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that's where my head was at that point. I was so fucking miserable. I remember, and it was just the meetings were getting to me. And then I had a mid-roll advertising agency reach out to me.
Okay.
And there are companies that say, you know, we'll take 30% of your money, but we'll sell your ad space for you.
Oh, that's cool.
And we'll sell you out. So there's a trade-off. That's a big chunk, 30%. But I don't have to go try to track these businesses down.
Yeah.
And they just say, here's your ads for this week. And so I was like, well, cool, I'll do that. So I signed the contract. And then they started booking it. Now, at this point, the podcast is over 100,000 downloads an episode. And they give me my inventory as they're starting to, it's like a Google Doc. And they're like selling ads for the next year, 2016. And I'm looking, I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's almost as much as I make at the fire department.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like just now.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, and the year hasn't even started yet, but they, you know, like, cause companies will buy ads for like the whole year, like two ads a month for the whole year and stuff.
Okay.
And there's a few of them that had done that. And I'm like, I was just looking at the bottom line. I'm like, oh shit, maybe I can do this. Like if I really give everything to this podcast, and I was loving what I was doing too. Cause it felt like it was impacting people's lives in a different kind of way, but a real way.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about it, like, could I do it? Now, that's crazy. It's a crazy fucking thought. I'm a government employee. I'm 15 years into a 25 and out job, meaning in 10 more years, I could retire with a pension and benefits and all this. It's the, you know, on paper, it's an amazing job.
Yeah, and you want to give that up to go talk into a microphone.
Right, because Stamps.com bought a couple of ads.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. And, you know, so I had that thought, and then things just started to get worse and worse and worse. And then they got real bad, and I had a board meeting coming up. And before I went to the board meeting, I was talking to Becky, and I broke down. I was crying. Like, and that's also out of character for me. I cry when I'm happy all the time.
Yeah.
I'm a big, fat, pussy crier when I'm happy. I don't cry when I'm sad.
I'm a baby. I cry all the time. You can ask my wife. I cry all the time. I can't help it.
We're like that.
I'm a sap.
I am too. I'm very empathetic.
Yeah.
Is part of it. Like, I cry. Like, have you seen A Star Is Born?
I have not seen it
yet. God, you're going to cry like a fucking
baby.
I've
heard that.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
Yeah, I'm a big sap. Anything that's like, I don't cry when I get hurt.
Right.
I'm
the same way.
I don't cry when I'm sad necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's always like sappy, emotional things.
That we're the same person.
Yeah, it kills me.
Becky makes fun of me about it so much. The same thing. Like, so there's, because I don't want to spoil that movie. And it's totally off topic.
It's
but
fine.
It's okay. But in that movie, there's a scene where, which is predictable, you know, Lady Gaga, who is the waitress, goes out, gets to go out on stage and sing in front of all these people, and she's like scared, and she does it, and then she just belts it out. Fucking waterworks, tears going down my face like a baby.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it was, she's just singing. It was just like, oh, how amazing that must be for her. I'm so happy for her. And I'm crying. Like,
oh, that's funny.
That's me. So
yeah, I'm the same way.
That's when I'll cry. Well, this time I was crying in a bad, ugly crying over going to a meeting.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and then Bob will be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by American Made Muscle Company. American Made Muscle Company is a premium fitness and lifestyle brand focusing on our love for living the healthiest life possible and our love for the country. They offer vintage Americana-inspired designs that are hand-printed on soft, high-quality material. And I'm telling you right now, these tees are super comfortable. My favorite shirt from them right now is a shirt that says simply this: work harder than you did yesterday. And that's a motto I try to live by. And for my listeners, and my listeners alone, they are offering 25% off your entire order. Just use code MADEUS at checkout and save 25%. All you got to do is go to AmericanMadeMuscleCompany.com, shop like normal, and at checkout, use code MADEUS, that is M-A-D-E-U-S, all one word, and save 25% on your entire order. Just that simple. Pause the podcast right now, go shop, use code MADEUS, M-A-D-E-U-S, at checkout, and that's all you got to do. Once again, that's AmericanMadeMuscleCompany.com, code MADEUS. We're back from the break. And before the break, you were talking about how you broke down before a board meeting and how it led to where we're going next.
As Mike would say, I cried like a little baby back bitch.
Mike's so funny.
That's what he called me when he beat me at darts today.
Yeah. Mike cracks me up. He's like the quietest dude until you get to know him, and then he's ready to go. Like, yeah. He's so funny.
And he's got it. We have, so this studio, I don't know if you've ever described it.
I have not.
It's 12 foot by 16 foot. We've recently added two windows, so it feels less like a submarine. used to have no windows. And so Mike and I work in this room 40 to 50 hours a week, the two of us in this little bitty space. Like, we work 5 feet away from each other. And it's very similar to you and TJ.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, it's tough to be, there's got to be a certain chemistry with two people to be able to work in a space like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Mike has it. And it's kind of a nice yin to yang thing, because I'm super loud and I talk all the time, and I'm energetic.
I cannot believe you haven't gotten complaints from the neighbors too, because I have heard you scream and yell and holler and do all sorts of things, scream profanities with the windows open.
I forget that we have windows now.
I'm sure that so for those that don't know, I'm not far from here, and I'm confident I could probably hear you from my house.
We'll have to test it out, because yeah. I've always wondered that, because, well, and the reason I always feel like people can't hear me is because, so that window faces the front. This window faces out onto our patio. In the summertime, Becky works from home too. Usually, if it's nice out, she's outside. She'll be with her laptop out on the deck.
Yeah.
And I'll be trying to get her attention, and if I'm in here screaming at Becky,
yeah,
nothing, zone out. But I forget that she doesn't pay attention to me ever. She does. She tunes me out. But like, I'll have to like get in the window and holler before she'll hear me. So I think, oh, well, there must be some weird kind of echo effect, and it doesn't get out. Until the other day when you were in here and Mike beat me at darts, and I screamed profanities at the top of my lungs.
Yeah, I was down at the end of the road, like, and it was. That's when I came back. I'm like, that was really loud.
And the window was only cracked a little.
Yeah. Not that I care if it's loud, but it was just funny to me that it was like, that was a lot.
Yeah, because there's a lot of F-bombs. So we have for my birthday last year, because of, and I'll get back to the story at some point, I promise.
It doesn't matter.
But so Mike says, he describes it as manic. So as I mentioned earlier, I have to write these episodes. I didn't used to write the episodes. I would literally sit down with a pile of paper and notes in front of me.
And just go for it.
Fucking wing it.
Oh, man.
That's every rough. Week. When Mike started editing, that got to be not as cool.
Yeah.
Because he's like, you dick. Like, because I would talk for 5 minutes. I'm like, you know what? No. Go scratch all that. Go back to where I said this and let's do this. And it's just a nightmare. It was easier for me because I knew what I wanted it to sound like. But for him, he's like, what do you want me to do with this? This is a mess.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And so I started kind of writing outlines, and I literally script the whole thing. But when I'm writing, and I really enjoy it, I love that process now, and it's much more organized. I'm learning that I actually like writing.
Yeah, and I don't think people realize how much time you put into these too. Like, I see it. I get to see it a lot. I get to see it weekly, how much time you put into it. But a lot of people just listen, and they hear you talk for an hour twice a week, and that's all there is.
Yeah.
And granted, the second episode isn't scripted.
Right.
But they don't realize how much time and effort you put into this.
Yeah, it is. It's a ton of work. And it's, every once in a while, somebody will like tweet me or something, be like, dude, you could cover more. Why don't you just do two episodes a week? Or why don't you do this? Like, this is ridiculous. Why is the episode only 35 minutes this week? And it's like, I don't, but I want to say, and if you're that guy and you're listening right now, I'm sorry, but I want to be like, fuck you. Do you have any, I was up till 2 a.m, 3 nights in a row looking at autopsy photos.
Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah. Cause it's a weird, that shift I got to make every week too, because like I said, it's research, study, research, and then try to do investigative work and figure out what does all this mean and how do I almost like what a lawyer would do, you know, how do I then convert that into a narrative that is going to resonate with people so they understand what I'm trying to say here. And then once I do that, then I have to go write a 16-page script.
Yeah.
My scripts every week average about 16-page single point or single spaced is about what a script is for about a 45-minute episode.
Okay.
And it just takes a long time. It takes a long time to do it. But in that process, when I get writer's block, I get, as I said, Mike described me as manic. Like I stand up. I used to have one of those bear desks where it would go up and down.
Oh, okay.
And I'll walk around and I fuck with Mike. I just fuck with him. And I don't, and it's almost like I can't control it. Yeah. I'm like, he's not amused by this and I need to stop. I'm enjoying the fact that he's not amused by it. It's amusing me that he's not amused by it.
Which makes it even funnier.
Right. And it would just be like, I mean, I'll literally like jump around the studio when I'm trying to think, you know, I'll be like back and forth. I'm like jumping and I'm talking to myself and I'm just walking back and forth. And at one point, so that what we call that our murder board, we always have that wall.
Yeah.
With is a kind of investigative board. I had little like upholstery needles, a pack of them for pinning stuff to the board. And I figured out that from here, from this side of the room, I could throw them and they would stick in the board. But it was like you had to just write. It was like a knife, so it's spinning, and you got to.
Oh, jeez!
And it became like a competition for me. So like I would have like I would be aiming at suspects on the board,
throwing these from
over here, and half of them were bouncing off and landing on Mike. They were all over the floor. We had airsoft guns. That was a fucking disaster.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that story. Right.
And so for my birthday this year, Mike got me a dartboard. And the dartboard was so that, as he said, when you get manic, you won't fuck with me. Throw darts. Throw darts at the board instead of throwing needles across the room. And it's turned into, we have a routine. So when we come in the morning, like we come in early, have a cup of coffee, and then we play our morning 2 out of 3. We only play cricket, and we play a 2 out of 3 dart game, which takes us a total of maybe 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And we play our games. That is very competitive, and we scream and yell a lot at each other. And then after lunch, we have our after lunch 2 out of 3.
Oh, geez.
And then if it's a day like today, we end up staying at work late after we get off because he beat me so many times that I refused to let him leave.
And you just can't take it.
Right. Until I could. And then he still fucking beat me. But that's when all the screaming happens. That's when most of the screaming happens, is during the dart games.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Also, if he comes in a bad mood, I yell at him and tell him he needs to stop making me sad.
Mike cracks me up.
I don't know how he puts up with me, honestly.
Yeah. He does a good job, though. He really does a good job.
He lets it flow off. I said, there's not, like, you and I couldn't, like, we're close friends.
Yeah.
We couldn't sit in this room.
No, there's no way. We'd strangle each other.
Right. Our personalities are too much the same.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, we got to have that yin and yang with me and Mike. Sure. And kind of same thing with me and Becky. We have very different, you know, we're the same in a lot of ways, but then we've got, like, wherever I'm high and something, she's low and vice versa. And it fits together pretty well. And that's, I guess, a good transition back into that story is I'm getting ready to go to this meeting and I'm having, for the second time in my entire life, a panic attack. Full blown. Feel like I'm having a heart attack. I can't catch my breath. I'm like, just, I couldn't stop like crying. I wasn't crying until she asked me what was wrong. She knew what was wrong. I talked to her a little bit. I try not to bring that shit home with me.
Yeah, it's hard.
You know, and I might come in and vent and bitch about it a little bit and, you know, and she'll listen to me. But I just try not to dwell on it. It's like, I just get it out of my, let shit roll off my back, you know, just get it out of my system and move on. But I just couldn't. And it was just getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And so the results of things like they can't train, you can't pay them, are now the firefighter, you know, that balance I was talking about earlier is starting to tip, you know, and it's like tensions are too high. Everybody's in the red. People are starting to turn on each other. People are starting to get pissed at me. They're pissed at me because they're not getting paid. So I'm like in between now. I'm arguing with the board to get my guys the stuff they need, when the guys are pissed off at me because I'm not getting them what they need.
Yeah.
And so, and then I'm trying to keep the peace, and I'm almost making excuses for the board so they don't get so pissed off at the board that they go cause a scene with the board and make the fucking problem worse.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's crazy.
Yeah. So it was just stress to the max. It was nothing. I wasn't accomplishing anything. And I was really like, it was weighing down on me that I got into this profession because I wanted to make a difference in people's lives. I've done that. I was an instructor for a long time. I was the director of fire science at the college for a long time until I retired from the fire department. I started my own company as a seminar instructor. I had created my own safety system called Systematic Risk Management, where I used to travel around the country and teach.
Well, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so I would, you know, I felt like I was impacting lives, and all of a sudden here I am just fucking arguing. That's all I'm doing. Yeah. I'm arguing. I'm not fighting fires. I'm just trying to put out fires, but like just personnel fires all day long, and nobody's fucking happy. And I don't know if I was doing the best job. I don't know. I know I was giving everything I fucking had.
Yeah.
I was putting everything I could into trying to make this work, trying to make the best fire department for the community that was paying our salary. And it just wasn't working. And I knew I was going to walk into the board meeting, and I can tell you, I should say their names, but I won't. The three people that every meeting were going to stand up and talk shit about whatever it was. It doesn't matter. It could be, you know, one of the guys, the garage door didn't open up all the way when they were rolling out to a fully involved house fire, and it clipped the top of the truck, broke the garage door, was one thing that happened.
Oh, geez.
It's nobody's fault. It was a malfunction of the garage door.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the guy drove through the garage door. He hit the button. It went up.
It just didn't go high enough.
And where it was at, he couldn't see that it wasn't up all the way. But it was one of the guys that coffee clutch didn't like. So now it turns into, why am I doing favors for my buddy and not writing him up for destroying the door? And how many thousands of dollars did that door cost? I mean, is that kind of shit? Just stupid shit.
Yeah.
But in a public meeting with a newspaper there.
Yeah, and they're not allowing you to talk.
Right, and I can't respond. I just got to sit there and be like,
Jeez, that's craziness.
Yeah, so that was, I was going to go to the meeting, and I was just like, I was having a panic attack. And then I still remember sitting in our kitchen right there, and Becky asking me, are you okay? What is wrong? Because she could just see it in me because I wasn't saying anything. I was trying not, the last thing I want is my wife to be stressed out about my job. And she said, what's wrong? And I just remember it just exploded. I mean, I just was bawling. And she's like hugging me, like consoling me like she would a child. I mean, she's a rock. She was there for me. And I'm just sobbing. And I'm just like, I can't do it. I can't fucking keep doing this. I hate it. I'm sure you can see it. Tears welling up my eyes remembering it.
Yeah.
It was so bad. And she, I remember she said, then stop. Stop doing it.
Oh. That's
do something else.
That's powerful.
It is. And it's super powerful for a guy like me that is kind of old fashioned, right? So I'm just, this is the way I was raised.
Yeah.
Whereas it's like, you know, I'm supposed to, and Becky works and provides income for us too, but it was like, I'm supposed to go out and work and provide for my family. And I have a good government job with a fair salary.
This is everything you were told you need to be.
Right. This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And I can't just quit. And she's always loved and respected me for that too. And for her to say, then stop doing it, go do something else. And I was like, I can't, like, what the fuck else am I? And I had that conversation about like, what am I going to do? I've been a fireman for 15 years.
Yeah.
Who's going to hire a fireman? You know, and it's not like I'm going to go get another chief's job. And if I did what I wanted, this area is too small. I'd have to move. I've had offers over the years.
Yeah.
I had an offer to go to Wisconsin, one to go to Ohio, but none of them were.
And then you have to uproot your whole family.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a mess.
And so it was just, and that was part of it. I literally have like diagnosed OCD, but not in the way like the turn the doorknob five times thing, like as good as it gets. But my issue is I project. It's what has always made me good at my job as a fireman, but in everyday life. And so what I do is when I see a problem, like I was kind of talking about earlier, my brain immediately goes into solution mode.
Yeah.
And I start projecting. So if I do that, it's like chess, right? Every little stupid thing, like where you're setting your beer can right there.
Yeah. You play out the every possible.
Right. Can't help it. Obsessively do it. Can't help it.
Yeah.
And that's fine until I can't figure out the solution. And then I lose my shit.
Okay.
That's when I start to fucking break down, when I'm just like, there's nothing I can do to stop this. I can. It's like you're just watching a train,
yeah,
getting ready to crash, and you can. There's, you know, there's no way you can stop it. And then I panic when that happens. And so that's what was happening. She told me, you know, do it, and I'm just like, I can't. Like, what else am I gonna do? Like, I can't. I just gotta. I got to do it, and I kind of got myself together, and she was, you know, she's loving on me and hugging on me, and do you have to go? If you don't have to go, don't go. Like, this is, you shouldn't have to live like this. And I was, it was just kind of like, it's about 7 o'clock. I got to go.
Yeah.
And I pull myself together and I go, and a meeting was just as bad as I thought it was going to be.
That's rough.
And it was that night I thought, I'm going to fucking quit. I'm going to quit my fucking job. I didn't do it that night, but I was like, I'm going to do it. Seriously considering the possibility, which is crazy. It's insane. It was insane for me to do that.
Yeah. And you had that thought during that meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then for the next couple of weeks, I went through and just things just were getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And I was like, I'm going to quit. And that was about the time that mid-roll had called me. And then I had I saw the potential for income, and it was... A few weeks had gone by. We had a special meeting, so I think like 2 weeks went by, and we had another meeting coming up. And same issues were happening. I was getting worried about it, stressed out. And I sat down and I was laying in bed. Told Becky, I was like, I think I'm gonna quit. I'm gonna quit. I mean, technically retire. I'm vested. I've been over there, but I quit. She's like, really? What are you gonna do? And I said, I think I'm gonna try to do this podcasting thing. Like, she's known along the way. That, you know, the offers I had and the income that was out there and the potential, but it's still, you know, if I said the wrong word, I could piss everybody off and that money's gone. It's still that way.
It's a huge gamble. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a fickle industry, but I want to try it. I feel like it's not like I made great money at the fire department. So it was like, it doesn't work. Find something else. I'll go back to construction. I'll do whatever I got to do, but I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it wasn't even like telling her that so much, but it was like asking, like, I don't want to do this anymore. What do you think? And she looked me in the eyes and made me cry when she said, I trust you. I know that whatever happens, you're going to take care of us. Like, and I want to make clear not to demean her, because again, she was working full time paying the bills too, but we were, and are a two-income family in order to make things work. And she said, I know that you're going to figure it out. I trust you. I love you. And you're going to work, and you will figure it out. I know you will. And she looked me in the eyes and said, quit your job.
That's incredible.
So I went to work the next day, and I got on my little computer, and I typed up a nice little email and sent it out to the board members. Saying, we don't see eye to eye. And I'm trying to remember how I worded it. Doesn't matter. Basically, in the nicest way possible, I said that, your vision of what this fire department should be and my vision of what this fire department should be are two very different things. And so I'm not the guy for this job. And here's my notice, quitting my job. And the stress, when I should have been the most stressed out in my entire fucking life, when I hit send and heard it go, whew, that's when I should have been the most stressed. It was the exact opposite.
Oh, really? See, that would have been the moment I was shitting myself.
The whole time leading up to that, I was shitting myself.
Yeah.
But it was like once, and it wasn't like a quick send. It was I had to think about it, and wrestle with it, and pace around, and then finally I was like, just fucking do it. And it was one of those like, there's done. It's done. I did it. I can't undo it. It's done.
Oh,
it's done. And I still remember hearing it go, whew, when it's sent. I'm like, okay, well. Here we go. They're going to be, and then I'm just waiting for it to get phone calls. They're getting their emails and stuff. Yeah. But, you know, ultimately they did. And, you know, we had meetings. We worked out the terms of my exit and I quit my fucking job.
Yeah. You know, was it a long road after that? I mean, to actually get out of the department?
Ended up being about 6 weeks.
Okay.
That was.
So that's not your typical 2 week and out.
No. It was maybe closer to 7. It was like the beginning of December.
Okay.
And no, it was. End of November, I think. Somewhere right around there.
Okay.
It was about a month, I should say. I told them in the letter that I'm willing to give you up to 6 months so that if you hire a new chief, then I can help train them, because I didn't have that.
Yeah.
They did the same shit to the chief before me, and he up and left. And then it took him a year to hire a new chief.
Oh, geez.
And so I came in with just no help, no idea or anything. I mean, I couldn't find, like, every task when I started wasn't just the task. It was like trying to find the stapler before I could staple the shit, before I could turn it in and figure out where, you know, shit like that.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to do that to somebody else coming in. I was like, I don't want to be here much longer than a month. I'm willing to stay up to 6 months.
Yeah, that shows a lot about you, too, really, to go that extra step to make sure that things go smoothly.
Yeah, they didn't think so. it wasn't even they. There was one particular board member who had become the treasurer, and then later, I was very much vindicated by the time this... So we have this meeting, right, and this particular woman who just... I don't even think it was me more so than... Anyway, it's a long, complicated story. There was a merged department between three towns.
Okay.
And she represented one of the towns and never wanted the merger to happen and wanted it to split back up. So she didn't want there to be a full-time chief at all because she wanted to split back to where they were.
Yeah, and she just wanted your head.
Right. Didn't give... I mean, just a cruel, heartless fucking person.
Ugh.
I mean, I was just nothing but a pawn in the way of her trying to manipulate that system. But doesn't matter. Not vindictive about it at all. I joke about it, but honestly, I'm not. It was the best move I ever made in my life.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we had the meeting, and I remember her saying like that. So this is the person doing the books. It's the one that has a high school education, no accounting training. She's our treasurer. And we had tangled a few times because I pointed out that she either was wrong or she was intentionally hiding money. Not stealing it, hiding it to make it look like we were more broke than we were to get her away.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a mistake. Give her the benefit of the doubt. But anyway, she's like, you think we're going to pay you and another chief for 6 months? You lost your mind. Like, talking to me like that in a fucking professional meeting.
Oh, geez.
With an audience.
That's not good.
No. And I was like, no. Listen, lady. I don't want to be here any longer than you do. I'm just trying to avoid what happened to me. If you want 2 weeks, I'll be gone in 2 fucking weeks. Happy to do it. If you want a month, if you want whatever you want. I just don't want to leave you guys high and dry. I don't want to leave the guys high and dry. And she just didn't say it. She said, not paying two people at the same time. That's stupid. Okay, whatever. And so they ended up working out. They're like, well, so I would stay till the end of the month, leave. So December 31st was my last day. And then that was it, is what we ended up working out.
New year, new me.
That's right. So January 1st, 2015, I was not a fireman. And that's why I have not shaved my beard since then.
Yeah.
15 years, not allowed to grow beard. No tattoos below the sleeve lines.
And you've totally gone opposite of that.
I've rebelled, right, since then.
Yeah, you've been trying to get me to do all sorts of shit. You're like, maybe tattoo my hand a little bit. All right, now tattoo my neck a little bit.
Right, just a little. Just a little.
Just before you go on national television, you're like, tattoo my neck just a little bit.
And the camera angle is right there, so they got it. Perfect. Your artwork's been on TV.
Yeah.
I'm sure it has before. Yeah, I'm sure it has before. But yeah, it was crazy. I started January. I was done. It was such a huge weight lifted off my shoulders. A little more stress now. So at the time, it was just me, right?
Yeah.
And so when I could look at that bottom line and go, psh,
we're good.
All I got to do is make a podcast. Doesn't cost me nothing to make a podcast.
Yeah.
Now I have 2 full-time employees and I have Shane that we pay. And we have, you know, we actually like fully do real investigations of these cases. So I'm gone all the time.
You're not just getting emails.
Yeah. I'm traveling down to Texas and Arkansas, and we had to go down to Mississippi to have some evidence analyzed a couple of weeks ago. So we have real expenses. So now it's a little more stressful, but luckily I have that accounting background.
Yeah.
So.
And then you came home and fingerprinted me immediately.
Isn't that awesome though?
It is awesome.
I learned how to do fingerprints.
Yeah. You came home and immediately fingerprinted me.
The nice man at the fingerprint shop gave me a kit and taught me how to do fingerprints so that I wouldn't have to drive down there the next time.
So at that moment that you quit your job, were you still Serial Dynasty at that point, or had you moved into Truth and Justice? And were you, I mean, when did that evolve to Truth and Justice?
It was a couple months, maybe a month before that.
Okay.
And so things snowballed quickly from like 20,000 to 100,000 downloads. And that's when like the advertising agencies were calling, and, you know, Sean really bridged the gap for us. Sean T did. And then at that time we were growing so fast, I climbed on the iTunes chart above Serial.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that was, I think I was never ranked one, but I think I was number 2 on the overall charts.
Okay.
Which was huge for me. And
yeah, that's massive.
Yeah. And so when Midroll, that's literally when Midroll called me and reached out to take me on to rep me as an ad agent. The first thing the guy said to me is like, you're ranked higher than the podcast you're talking about. And so like, we want to do this. And I was like, hey, dumbass, I'm not talking about the podcast anymore. I'm kind of my own thing now.
You're like, I'm a big deal.
Right. Yeah. I'm a big old deal. So right after that happened, I got a letter from Serial.
Uh-oh.
From Serial, the Serial podcast, asking me, so our logo, we were the Serial Dynasty, was kind of a mock of their logo. It wasn't their logo, but so if anybody's ever seen Serial, it's like stacked up like four like rectangles. Well, and so what we did is our Tate Krupa was a listener who made our logo at the time. She had a cool idea to take, because we were talking about all these different podcasts, to have the same type of effect. It's going in a different direction, but it had the other podcasts listed on the panels of that layer.
Okay.
But the color scheme was kind of the same. And they literally said that they think that the reason that I moved ahead of them in the charts is because people were mistaking me for them. So cease and desist.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter, because I was already in the process then of changing, rebranding, because people were, and that was the other thing, right? So that case is almost over. People started telling me, well, we want you to do more cases. And so people started emailing me new cases they wanted me to look into. Like family members, like my uncle's in prison in Texas and he's wrongfully convicted. He needs help. Will you help him? And I'm like, well, shit. So here's the thing. All of a sudden I get to do something that's going to be impactful and make a difference again. That's what I always wanted to do.
Yeah.
I can get back into it.
You're actually making an effort now instead of just talking about what somebody else is talking
right.
about.
Right. Yeah. And so I was looking at these other cases and all this stuff. And I was like, well, we can't be the Serial Dynasty doing our own cases. And so I had the tattoos that TJ did on me, the Equitas Veritas tattoos, which translates roughly to truth and justice. And so we said, truth and justice.
That's perfect. Awesome.
So we decided to call it truth and justice. That way we do a broad range of cases. We took on the... we started taking on new cases at that point, and we were actually already had that in the works when all this happened. And the other thing was, like I said, I was working in the garden shed, this studio my listeners built.
That's incredible.
Yeah. When they were all telling me, we want you to keep doing this. And I was like, listen, I can't record. I can put up with being too hot out there in the summertime, but it gets fucking cold in Michigan in the winter. I can't be out there in that shed when it's 20 below zero.
Yeah.
I can't do it and record these. And so one listener emailed me and was like, well, how much would it cost to build you what you need, a climate-controlled studio? I was like, I don't know. So I kind of figured it out. And, you know, if I built it myself and about what it would cost, like it cost about $20,000. He's like, dude, put up a GoFundMe. If the listeners really want you to do this and that's what you need, I bet they'll fund it. So put up a GoFundMe. And within a couple of weeks, listeners ended up raising like $22,000. I was like, well, I guess I'm building a studio, which was nice because... You know, ethically, all the money needed to go into the studio. You know, I wasn't going to take that money for anything but this. And so that's why, like, we have very nice, expensive microphones and good computers and a good mixer and all that. Because it was like everything's going as I bought the shell of a building, and then Mike and Ryan and I, we insulated it, soundproofed it, put the drywall up, painted carpet, and so it's a shed. It doesn't look like a shed inside.
Yeah,
but that's what it is. And then, you know, all the soundproofing and all that stuff and.
It really rivals any studio I've seen. And I love bringing people here, because when I bring people into interview, we go, all right, where are we going? I said, don't worry about it. We're going to go down here.
Uh-huh.
And you can kind of see the people when they read it, when they come up, they're like, what the hell is this? You know, and you come in the studio and it's a fucking studio. And when you're in here, I felt that the first time I came in here, which was a while ago now, but the first time I came in here, you don't realize you're not in a studio. I mean, you are. This is a studio. I don't want to say it's not a studio, but you don't. It feels like part of a bigger complex.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we were going for. And we put a lot of thought into, I mean, literally, Mike and I had, we done scale with like index cards like those, little scale cutouts of like the size of the table we wanted and the chairs. And we're like laying them out to see, because everything, like if you look, there's an outlet on the floor right under there that we wired, you know, because we wired it and everything. But it was just like, how can we perfectly lay this out where we can have a workspace and a recording table in here and have room just for storage and all that stuff? And yeah, but it was awesome. The listeners built this. So that happened in September. We had this thing delivered and we're building it in November, as far as the finishing and everything, getting everything ready. And then it was a few weeks later. So it was the perfect storm, the broken road I was talking about. So at the same time as shit was going so bad at the fire department, where I was literally having panic attacks, miserable, crying, going to work, couldn't take it anymore. My listeners had just built me this kick-ass workspace to work in.
Yeah.
An advertising agency just offered to pay my salary, the same salary. At that time, the number was almost identical. You know, it's changed since then. But at that time, when I was making that decision, My bottom line for mid-roll was almost the exact same salary I made at the fire department.
That's mind-blowing.
It is. It was, I mean,
you know, and especially at that time frame, that's exactly what you needed.
Yeah. Yeah. And everything was exactly. And you know, there's people from all different backgrounds. I'm a Christian myself. And for me, it was like, that's, if there was ever a time where you say that was God, for me, that was it. You know, by my faith, it was like putting all these pieces into order and having them all just all in place. So when that moment, when I hit my breaking point, because one, they were mutually exclusive. It was, this work wasn't affecting that work.
Yeah.
But it just happened to be at the same time when I was just like, I can't do this anymore. It was, well, you've got a beautiful office and studio out there. You have cases that people want you to cover. You have an advertising agency that's going to pay your salary to do it. Everything's there. All you got to do is make the leap.
Yeah.
And I made the leap and then jumped to that first case was the Smith County cases. So that was this case of Kenny Snow, who led us to Edward Eights. So that's how this all started. The first season that we did alone after I quit the fire department by myself was Edward Eights case out of Smith County, Texas. And then that story, not over, but where it's at right now, was on September 5th this year, I flew down to Texas and walked him out of prison.
That is amazing. And I tell you what, I watched the live Facebook video, and that's one of those moments that I bawled like a baby. I sat on my couch on my day off and bawled like a baby watching him walk out of prison.
It was incredible. And if you saw the Facebook live video, I'm sure you saw me bawling like a baby too, sitting right there.
And that goes back to your, this is on a little bit different, but you talk about, you know, your fans funding this studio. They also put together a big fund for Ed when he got out, which is incredible. I mean, you have incredible listeners that just really want to help.
They're amazing. They make everything happen. You know, I always said our old intro, which I kind of loved and kind of felt like it was douchey for me to play it.
Still pretty good.
Yeah, it was awesome. Shane Yoder made it, and it was awesome. It was just like, for me, if someone else produced my show, it'd be cool.
Yeah,
but since I was doing it, it was a, but one line in there, and those were all lines out of podcasts, was that I'm simply a mouthpiece. Mike makes fun of me for that sometimes, but that's what it was like. Like I have the microphone and I talk, and I feel like my job, it's almost the same as at the fire department, where it's like just give an outlet. I believe that amongst a world of ugliness, that there are good people out there that are just looking for the opportunity to make a difference. And that's what Truth and Justice is all about. And that's what the listeners have done. And it's had amazing, incredible results. Ed Eights didn't walk out of prison because of me, because of Allison Clayton or his parole attorney, Roger Nichols. Ed walked out of prison because 200,000 people from around the world all gave whatever they had into his case to make the ball move forward after 20 years.
That's just absolutely incredible and moving. And I'll tell you what, that's probably a great place to end this. So, Bob, this is something I ask everybody. So if you had anything, tell the listeners, if they're going through some struggles at work or struggles in their personal life, something that you've learned through this process, what would it be?
It's tough. I do know what I want to say is you have to believe in yourself. And I was lucky enough to be married to a woman that gave me the courage to believe in myself.
That's awesome. Bob, I appreciate you joining me. And I will tell you this, to all the people that don't know, Bob has been a huge influence on my show and has really helped put me out there to do this. And I can't thank you enough for putting me out there, buddy.
It's my pleasure. As soon as you told me about this project, I want it all over. I think it's awesome what you're doing.
So last thing I'll make you do before we go out of here, anybody wants to find you, find your show, how can they do it?
The show you can find on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, anywhere you get your podcasts. Just look for Truth and Justice with Bob Ruff. Our website is truthandjusticepod.com. And we're all over social media. We're on Twitter at Truth Justice Pod. My personal Twitter is at Bob Ruff Truth. And of course, we're on Facebook, and there's the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page, which is tons and tons of discussion on the cases if you're into that. And then where I'm becoming more active, where I feel like is my favorite place to be anymore, is really on Instagram. And my Instagram handle is at Truth Justice Pod.
Excellent. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. to guests.
This is going to be rough to get through, I have a feeling.
I think it'll be fine once we get started. It's just weird. I'm just not used to not being the interviewer.
All right, let's give it a...
And you're not in your chair.
Yeah, I know. And I'm not, I can't see the clock and I can't see the fucking computer.
This is awesome. I've taken control of your show.